The Money Show.
Small business.
Now, of course, we get towards the end of the show, though, but with what's it, just under 23 minutes to go until the bottom end of the show. We do have our small business focus at this hour. Then we are aiming to try and take a look at how COVID-19, not just changing the way small businesses will function, but really how they'll function even in the future. Getting that story right is going to be so, so critical and so important as well. So hopefully we can get to discuss that story as well. Just in some other news that I've sort of seen as well, there's Eskom issuing a load reduction notice for various high density areas, particularly in five provinces this evening. It is preventing, it's battling to prevent its network from overloading, which often leads to the explosion of transformers. So electricity is likely to be cut off from 5 to 8, particularly around Soweto, the Vaal, Newcastle in Tlanzeni, and Mopani district out in Limpopo as well. So load reduction being put out on that front. But let's continue our small business focus. And yeah, those load reduction issues certainly won't help South Africa's small businesses. Well, Tepo Phakathi, the founder at Kaelo Business Hub, joining us on the line. Tepo, thank you so much for the time. I trust you're well and you can hear us this evening.
Arabi, I can hear you loud and clear, my brother. Good evening to you and to all the listeners.
Fantastic, but thank you so much for your time then. As a business hub, difficult to ensure that small businesses not just know their role, but know how exactly they can build themselves moving on from the COVID-19 pandemic and having to advance because of how things currently look. Have you seen them sort of look to adapt as best as possible?
Absolutely. I mean, it's been a very tough time for a lot of people. I think that, you know, the focus or advice to a lot of the businesses that we've been incubating and assisting has been that, look, COVID-19 or the post-COVID-19 economy is going to be very different, so people need to adapt. Well, I mean, amongst the many things that have happened is that, you know, we've sort of embraced, or rather COVID-19 has kind of expedited the adoption of sort of online shopping and that sort of thing. So consumers have rushed online and they're buying online because orders are being fulfilled. People are getting comfortable with orders being fulfilled online. Online orders coming through. You know, this whole online shopping thing has had a very notorious reputation for, you know, giving you goods that you didn't buy, or something that is a lookalike to what you thought you ordered, and so or some orders not being fulfilled at all. And we've seen a lot of small businesses coming through, delivering on their word. And so this has presented a wonderful opportunity where people have now suddenly got access. You know, you used to operate a small business in some village. Now suddenly you're on the internet and everybody wants to buy from you. So, you know, it's presented wonderful opportunities from an access to market perspective. However, with that, it has also presented an incredible challenge in that suddenly you're not competing with the guy down the road. You know, you're competing with the entire world in whatever product category you operate under. So it has presented good opportunities and some awesome challenges for small businesses and has demanded for them to adapt.
Yeah, that adaptation, is it costly?
Yes. You know, fortunately, online is not as costly as it used to be. You know, suddenly now with the advent of fiber and all these packages that are really inexpensive from a business point of view, you know, it's part of the telephone cost. And it's not that expensive. What is expensive, however, is that now suddenly the product has to be shipped, right? So you have to move products from one part of the country to another, and that can become expensive, or rather that does add a layer of expense. And oftentimes the consumer is not willing to pay for the value of the product plus the delivery cost. So what we're seeing is that we're seeing a lot of clients having to think of strategies on how to sort of manage that cost in an effective way so that, you know, they protect their margin. And don't add a layer of cost for the consumer. So it is not really expensive to do that adaptation. There's just a new orientation, a new way of thinking, looking at the world very, very differently. You know, online is very different too, because you can't give the customer the same experience they had when they walked into your store. Suddenly, you know, you have to give the customer an online experience, which means you have to curate this experience in so many more different ways to try and reach that consumer and give them some sort of semblance of what they used to experience when they came into the store.
Yeah, also a touchless society though now, right? So how do you develop and create the kind of experience that somebody who is coming through, a consumer of sorts, wants to come through and actually delve in and dive into whatever it is that you're selling, but it's a touchless society. So being careful, being extra cautious, and maybe creating that kind of environment for future's sake anyway.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a future, right? I spent some time in China in October last year, and I promise you I didn't bring back COVID. I was not responsible for that. It was pre-COVID. So I was in China in October last year, and amongst the many things that I experienced is that China is very much a digital economy, right? So everybody's buying things online, and people have become accustomed to it. So what we do to try and maintain that level of touch, that consumer experience, is maintain communication, you know, from acknowledgement of the order to, you know, communicating at a high level on delivery dates and where the shipment is, et cetera, until the consumer has the product, and then communicating out to them to really reach out to them and find out what their post-purchase experience is like. And that has become very important. So the post-fulfillment part of things. Consumers are now starting to experience that when they deal with all of these sort of well-developed multinationals that actually ship things internationally. So it has become necessary for our people in small businesses to also do some of the similar strategies in terms of communicating with the consumer, because the consumer is now spoiled for choice. Now they've experienced some good customer service, and it's demanded of the small businessmen as well.
So, so demanding of them. It's the innovation that then needs to be part of this entire process is also probably very critical then as well, isn't it? I mean, now you have to think of the idea to say, okay, cool, I'm not the only one probably offering this, but I need to make it individualistic. I need to create the kind of element that would keep the consumer staying with me and not somebody else.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have unprecedented access to consumers. Because remember, when someone is trying to buy something online, there's certain information you need of them, information that you otherwise not acquire in store. So now suddenly you have a lot more information of the consumer. You can now track what they are doing using cookies, when they leave your store, where do they go, et cetera, et cetera. And once you track that, you have a lot more information that is now essentially incorporating it in terms of how you operate your business. To have all of this data make sense to you, to say, what is the consumer doing? What are they looking for? How are they using your product? Perhaps they're not using the product in the traditional sense, they're using it for a different purpose. And it allows you to know a little bit more, to try and, you know, give the consumer what it is exactly that they want by getting closer and closer and closer to how they're using, how and what for they're using their your products. So this has created an immense opportunity for small businesses. However, small businesses struggle with resources, because a lot of the time that requires you to pool resources, and often small businesses are stretched for resources, particularly during these COVID days where, you know, to some extent, especially in the beginning of the COVID period in South Africa during the high levels of lockdown, where you had basically everything at a standstill. And, you know, so businesses are still trying to recover that from that, still trying to find the resources, the funds to recover. And whilst you're trying to do that, there's demand on you as a small business to still give people a wonderful customer experience and still fulfill orders and still do what is expected of you by international standards. So it is incredibly challenging. It's a very different environment now to what it used to be. But Arabile, I want to tell you this much. You know, for product-oriented businesses, this is not such a big thing. Product-oriented businesses, you're still in essence selling the same product, right? And you're still just trying to get it to the consumer. If you're a service-oriented business, it's very different. You know, service-oriented businesses have suffered greatly. Some industries, you know, have just about collapsed. You know, hospitality, small businesses have been on a hiding to nothing, you know? So unless you were essential services, you have not been able to operate in this economy for a while. And the comeback is different because the consumer is also watching their pennies, right? We know that some 2 to 3 million people have lost their jobs during this high intense COVID period. And the result of that is the consumers that are working are watching their pockets a lot tighter, and people are making decisions a bit different. So if you're in a service environment, it is that much more demanding that you differentiate yourself very well, and that you try to reach the customer's heart as opposed to their mind. And that's just, you know, a new environment in which you have to operate.
Sure. I think it's just absolutely scary. And I can imagine that the people who perhaps come to you for thoughts, advice, ideas even, who come to your business hub and just think, what can I get right? They must be scared too at a time like this.
Absolutely. I mean, fear is very palpable. So you're seeing people saying, look, you know, I've been in prisons for 3 years. I've never really experienced this, right? So to give you a sense, I've been in prisons for nearly 20 years. It'll be 20 years in February 2021. So in my experience, when I started out in business, interest rates were around 22%, right? So today, you're dealing with interest rates around 7%. It's a very different market. The ability to borrow and the ability to leverage credit to grow your business is there now, whereas it was not there when I started out.
Mm.
What is happening to today's businesses is that it's a bit scary if your business is fairly new because you have not experienced any real macroeconomic level challenges. So if you were there during the credit crisis of 2008 fame, then at least you've experienced the crisis. You know what it looks like. But this is a crisis that is kind of unparalleled because it brought the entire world to a standstill. Not only the financial markets and that sort of thing, but this has been incredibly ubiquitous in that it permeated every single industry and every single space. Even if you were an essential service, to some extent, this still had some sort of challenge that it posed to you. So what you're seeing is you're seeing a lot of fear, a lot of people not knowing what the future looks like. You know, we keep hearing things about the second wave. And people are saying, you know, do I want to invest? Do I want to commit to investing in my product line to improve it or to invest in the service, to hire more people, et cetera, et cetera. And those investment decisions are sort of being put to a hold until there's some sense that, you know, the worst is behind us and the crisis is done with. And then we can get back to some normalization, albeit at a different space. We know, for example, that the economy will not get back to its 2019 levels for at least another 3 years. So you're finding that, you know, businesses now are saying, well, should I suspend my R&D? Should I suspend my headcount? Should I, you know, what is it that I can do to preserve capital and then employ the capital and deploy it in such a way that I get an immediate and absolute return on that capital? Mm. So the decision process is very different now to pre-COVID. And so businesses are having to think about all of these things. But I mean, there's many businesses we worked with just before COVID. I mean, we advised a lot of clients to create online stores. We didn't know that there was going to be any such thing as COVID. However, there was a lot of thinking around where the world is going. Online, you know, the consumers shifting to online, convenience is important. And these are mega trends, right, that can't be stopped. They'll continue regardless of what's happening in the macroeconomic environment. And those businesses have received wonderful dividends from having taken those actions early enough. And the businesses that have been unable to shift, we've got clients that are involved, for example, that we've been supporting, and those clients have suffered immensely. No matter what business they're in, if they were in a mall in April, no one was anywhere near Mall Malta go sound, probably until June. So, you know, there's a slow turnaround. Consumers are sort of coming back. But even when they're coming back thinking very differently to what they thought before. So, you know, their prioritization is there now. The savings culture is kind of starting now. You know, for the longest time in South Africa, our savings rate was pretty appalling, you know, compared to other, you know, developing markets like China, where the thing is 30%. In South Africa, we had none to speak of, really. The consumer has always been stretched. And what COVID has done is given the average person the ability to save if they were still in employment and if they did not suffer, you know, a curtailment of wages or anything like that. So, you know, and that will eventually yield great dividends for the entire economy, because if you want to have a buoyant small business industry, you have to have a high savings rate. And we're starting to see that, or some you know, little anecdotes of, you know, situations where that is happening, and it's exciting to see. So, you know, this eventually means that there's going to be more small businesses that come into the fray, and that you have more competition if you're in small business. So this is the time to kind of perfect your value proposition, to think about things very clearly, and to say, how are you going to be different in this post-COVID environment?
What's the first thing that goes? What's the first cost that disappears and goes in a time like this? I mean, you know that you have to save, you have to keep back everything you sort of have, you know. So what's sort of the first big ticket item that you say, I can't necessarily go in this direction? Is it just R&D? Because I would hope that, hopefully not, because that's absolutely critical to the business's functioning.
Yeah, so every business is different, right? So you have to look at where's the fat, where's the muscle, and where's the bone. So, you know, you can cut the fat and possibly trim it all off, but, you know, you don't want to cut into the muscle, because then you thwart your ability to grow and your ability to operate, since they can't cut into the bone that's killing the business. So you've got to think of it in those three layers. And typically the first thing that goes in a lot of businesses is whatever they regard as the luxury. And we've seen in some businesses, they consider marketing a luxury, and so they cut that out first. In some businesses, it's the staff. So you say, you know, if my total staff, can I trim there and see how many people I can operate with? So who's critical and who's not? And so, and this is the reason why you've seen a lot of retrenchment. But what the government did right is that they offered, you know, to the extent that it reached them, they offered small businesses some sort of reprieve or some sort of assistance in terms of these COVID-19 funds to the extent that they reached those businesses. But also, I mean, there's been a lot of, you know, the banks have kind of offered many people moratoriums on their loans, etc. And that has been very, very helpful to a lot of small businesses. However, for some businesses, that is incredibly, it's not helpful. You know, Arabin, we own schools. You know, one of the businesses we own are schools. We've got 18 schools across the country, and all of these are elementary schools, so kind of early childhood development stuff. And one of the things that we saw, remember when the president announced on the 15th, which was a Sunday, that we're in a national state of disaster, he announced that schools must close on the 17th. Now, what you experience immediately is that a lot of parents stop paying. So, you know, the schools are the first ones to feel it. And in a school environment, your main cost or your core cost is the teachers. So what do? You furlough your teachers? Do you say, guys, I'm putting you on a hold for a while until the situation is sorted? Or what do? In our case, we decided to invest in the development of those teachers, so them getting more qualification, them becoming better. However, it's because we had the resources to do it. For a lot of other similar businesses, we saw them suffer. We saw them stop paying teacher wages, even though those teachers are not formally retrenched, but they were not receiving their wages. And so, you know, those businesses cut really deep into the muscle and pretty much into the bone, and this might undermine their ability to operate when things normalize, except to say that if you are in an economy where generally there aren't jobs, you can still perhaps, you know, have your staff return. But, you know, in a competitive environment, as soon as you put your staff on hold, that staff can move. And if those staff members move, then you really hurt your ability to there's no institutional memory in your business. There's, you know, you have to have new teachers that you induct into the business, and it becomes an incredible difficult process. So in our case, I think that, you know, different businesses have to take a very different approach. You know, you have to decide where the luxuries are and cut what you can. But here's another thought. To the extent that some businesses have cut people and have managed to continue operating, at least at a very high level, without those people, chances are those jobs are not coming back. So now, what kind of environment are you going to be operating in as a small business? Because ultimately, your customers are the people that are employed elsewhere. And, you know, in a high unemployment environment, the small businesses that exist will compete much more fiercely with one another. Yeah. So you have to really perfect your value proposition. Think about that down the line a lot.
Final words of advice then to these small businesses. I mean, now is going to be a time of great, let's call it hustle, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Warren Buffett put it best. You know, he said, when there's blood in the street, you know, this is the time to go out there and see what you can do. When people are fearful, you invest. So this is the time to invest, because I don't know what happens. You know, we are very close to a vaccine being found in the world. And, you know, the reality is, you know, things will normalize and economies have to grow back, because there's, if you think about how economies function, there's a certain amount of money that is in circulation, et cetera.
Yeah.
So ultimately, production has to go back to feasible levels unless the whole world gets inflation. Mm-hmm. That is not going to happen. So in other words, production needs to rise again. And to the extent that things start to recover, production will rise, jobs will come back. So if you invest now, it'll pay dividends in the future. Sure. So it is essentially, if I was advising a small business, I'd say to them, take the pain now.
Yeah.
With the view that, you know, the future will come back, it will look better. I mean, if the economy has shrunk by 10%, think about it in simple terms. And over the next year, the economy will come back to where it was. And over the next 2 years or so, it'll come back to where it was in 2019, which is a 10% growth.
Yeah.
And if you are there to take flight of that growth, all the better for you.
Tshepo Phakathi, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it. From Kaelo Business Hub, joining us now to unpack that, the future of the small business. COVID-19 changing the entire environment around. Some well worthwhile listening as well there. Thank you so much for your time this evening.